feeling broken, barely holding on. But there's just something so strong somewhere inside me, and I am down, but I'll get up.
Welcome back to the Film Experience Podcast. I know it's been a really long time, but we're back for Oscar season. With me today, we forgot to introduce ourselves while we were recording. We're a little rusty. Joe Reed from Low Resolution, Katie Rich from Cinema Blend, Nick Davis from Nick's Flick Picks, and myself, Nathaniel Rogers from The Film Experience. Hope you enjoy.
Back on my feet, this is far from over. You haven't seen the last of me. You haven't seen the last of me.
Oh, you sound great.
No echoes.
I guess I have to be wearing the headset.
Oh. So no breakaway dance numbers in this one? Is that what we're saying?
No.
We're all tethered.
Or somebody will have to tape it up my back or something. Makes those attractive profiles for dancers.
Get you some sequins to go with it, too.
Done.
Speaking of sequins, I feel like we should have a theme song.
Totally.
Well, now that I've been singing that burlesque song that spells out the word burlesque in it for the last 5 minutes, it should probably be that.
Which one?
All of them. All of the ones with burlesque in the title.
I was thinking we should do a quartet version of You Haven't Seen the Last of Us Yet.
We are the share of the podcast world, clearly.
Just when you think we're gone, we come back.
You think that'll be the Price Waterhouse moment of the Oscars this year? All the accountants will come out singing You Haven't Seen the Last of Us.
I'm going to be really disappointed if they don't do something burlesque.
Aren't we predicting them to have a Best Song nomination, at least?
I am.
Right? What if Price Waterhouse get confused as to which song people are voting for? They're like, wait, burlesque.
Burlesque.
This year we have an unusual situation. All five nominees are called burlesque.
But one of them is from The King's Speech. It's weird.
You missed the burlesque number in The King's Speech?
I left at the beginning of the credits, so I didn't stay through the end.
Well, maybe if Birdie spelled things out, he wouldn't stand.
True.
And if he sang words he didn't stutter, it all makes sense. It really is a missed opportunity they had there.
Okay, hold on just one second. I'm going to make sure this is recording. I just had to double check because last time I didn't record the podcast.
Yeah, that was so sad.
You guys had to do it over again?
No, we didn't
do it over again. It lost its history.
And none of you will ever know what we talked about. We don't even remember what we talked about.
Well, that was when you predicted all the winners correctly.
I know. Yeah.
It was when we totally knew exactly how True Grit would perform at the box office. It was amazing.
That was amazing.
So, yeah, we need to start building up the legend around that right now. The Lost Podcast, yeah.
Totally.
The Apocryphal Podcast. So, True Grit. Let's start there. There's so many places we could start.
Yeah. So there's an Oscars coming up, I hear.
Is there?
Interestingly enough.
It's like they do it every year.
I thought we were here to talk about the Switch.
Did you just see the Switch, or is this just...
Which terrible Jennifer Aniston movie was that this year?
That's the one where she was a boyfriend?
That one. I see.
No, it's I thought that was the one that she got the sperm donation from Mark Ruffalo.
Almost. See, I can't ever forget the poster with Jason Bateman smelling the cup of his own sperm, so it's kind of indelibly... It was horrible.
I don't remember that poster. I think I successfully blocked it out. Okay, so I have read Katie's top 10 list.
I have too. It was so entertaining.
But
thanks, guys.
None of the rest of us have done one yet. Katie, we'll start with you. How difficult was it for you to narrow that down?
I had like a couple of locks, like the top four were the ones that I knew that I was going to put on there. And everything else, it was like, what do I appreciate this for? Like, do I want to include Scott Pilgrim and Inception? That's like the blockbusters. And I went with Scott Pilgrim. And like, do I want to include documentary? You know, I put Restrepo on there, but it was kind of between that and The Tillman Story and Inside Job and Client 9 and all of these amazing documentaries. So it was, I mean, it felt like none of them were like locks. I have to have it in there, but I was trying to like represent what I liked from the year. And that was the really hard part about it.
Because I find it's easy to put them in tiers, but then everything feels equal within that tier. So like, how do you decide?
So like, you do it by like, okay, these are the perfect movies. These are the almost perfect movies. These are the pretty good movies.
That's how I do it. Grading just doesn't really help, because you'll suddenly look at something you gave an A- and you're like, but I don't love that as much as my B+.
Yeah, I can't pay any heed to the grades that I give movies. I feel like that's just sort of a rough approximation of where I was at the time, but there's no way that anything, if I give a movie, say, a B+ back in June, like, that means nothing to me as I'm looking at my list now. As of now, I still can't decide on what I thought of Blue Valentine and Rabbit Hole, which was, like, a month ago. It helps me to sort of keep a rough list as I go through the year. Once I hit that end of the year, I kind of just put all the ones at the top of the list in a jumble and just be like, okay, what can my list not live without? And that usually helps me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally...
It's like baseball.
I have to put my list online as part of our site, and I like put it with star ratings. I look on there, and it's insane. Like, you know, I gave The King's Speech a really high rating because I thought it was a really good movie, but I had no desire to put it on my top 10 above, you know, again, Scott Pilgrim, which I don't think is a perfect movie, but I really put it on there. It's such a weird math.
I have to tell everybody, I threw on HBO this morning, and it's been on mute in my room ever since because I'm obviously on the podcast, but I just looked up and Avatar has come on. So
oh, good.
It's this podcast can never happen without Avatar infringing in upon my personal space.
How are your eyes?
They've scabbed over and they've healed fairly well. It's been a year, so I've built up their strength again. Anyway.
Even with that re-release, hey, maybe that will be eligible for Oscars.
Oh, yeah, the re-release.
Like, back to 2000. Actually, it's 2011, so now we're, like, really.
Oh, my God, we're still far back.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah.
Happy New Year. Okay, so
should we talk about the Oscars?
We should. So, your New Year's wish. What one nomination, total long shot, do you wish would happen?
Are we considering Diane Wiest and Rabbit Hole as an impossible get at this point? Because if that's the case, then she's mine.
God, that drives me crazy that she's not going to get in there.
Right?
What? How, like, why didn't... What? Who just didn't try to make this happen?
Lionsgate?
I'm totally baffled by this.
It seems like the movie didn't even open.
Yeah, but although Nicole Kidman's still out there pretty... Yeah.
Well, that's the stuff that sort of baffles me, is when a movie is clearly being seen because one element of it is getting recognition.
Although, does that mean people are seeing it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, I have to ask the same question.
Or if it's just that...
Because whenever there's only one element, I always think, is this because people think, oh yeah, I've heard she's great and I like her.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes when it's one element, it's when the movie isn't that good and there's one sort of shining element of it. This is clearly not the case. I think Nicole Kidman's fantastic too, but I walked out of that movie talking about John Cameron Mitchell's direction, the adaptation from the stage play, and Diane Wiest.
Yeah. And the kid, Miles Teller.
Yes, Miles Teller, my God.
Yeah, the park bench scene when he's going too fast just kills.
Yeah.
It's like they just didn't have the money or didn't have the time to put together campaigns for it. I mean, they only got the movie in September. So maybe they just knew they could zero in on Nicole Kidman and figured that would just get the movie some money. I don't
know. Well, that very well. It was probably, that's probably what it was an economic decision. But it's unfortunate because I think that movie has gone over maybe better than even they thought it would. That they maybe thought it was a tougher sell than it was, because everybody I've talked to who has seen the movie has loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the thing I'm most surprised about, actually, is not Diane Wiest, but how little attention the screenplay's gotten.
Yeah.
I mean, take away John Cameron Mitchell for a second, because it is sort of an invisible director job, which is very different than what he's done before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's the type of film that would normally, if people liked it, they would call it a writer-actor movie.
Mm-hmm. Sure. The only reason why I bring up John Cameron Mitchell is that... From what I understand from talking to people who have either read or seen the play, is that whole thing with the comic book doesn't really exist in the play.
Right.
And that image and it's sort of, it's reoccurring until you finally see the whole thing, but all those little sort of portals with the different faces in it, and sometimes the faces are not in it. Sometimes it's they're happy and they're sad, and it's all this. That image, like, took my breath away in that movie. And that seems to me like the biggest sort of John Cameron Mitchell stamp on that movie. And you're right about it being relatively invisible directing, but I feel like that moment, such an indelible mark on that movie.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I liked about the screenplay a lot was that it, you know, in terms of stage adaptations, you usually feel these really awkward things like, oh, they're outside now. For no specific reason other than that they're supposed to open it up.
Right.
But this never, I never felt once like, I wonder how this particular scene played on stage.
Right. And I bet people wouldn't know that the whole Sandra Oh plotline doesn't exist in the play at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's really, I mean, she's mentioned offhand by someone else, but there's, or she's not in the play at all.
Wow, yeah.
But it does seem like Diane Wiest is kind of an impossibility at this point, which is so surprising.
I mean, that was a very strong category this year, I thought. That I think both of the actress categories this year really were very competitive. So you can sort of be happy in that light. I don't think there are too many people who are going to get nominated in either one of those categories that I'm going to feel like, well, that's an undeserving nomination. Yeah. But even still.
My pick for the rooting for was actually also in supporting actress, if you want to take that as a segue.
Mm-hmm. Yes!
I kind of always knew this was not going to happen, but Nowhere Boy, I saw at Sundance and really liked. I thought it was a really strong movie with really great acting in it. And I really thought Kristen Scott Thomas could have jumped in there somehow in supporting actress. She's playing John Lennon's aunt. It's this great icy performance, and then it kind of turns, she doesn't turn warm, but you kind of understand her by the end. I mean, it's not like leaps and bounds ahead of what she's done before, but I thought it was really solid, and that movie just came and went.
Like, I don't even remember seeing it in theaters around here. I would have seen it. And all of a sudden, I was just like, wait, so that movie, Welcome to the Rileys did that. Like, there were a good handful of movies where it was just like, you heard about them and heard about them and heard about them, and now, like, oh, now they've gone.
Yeah.
I think that's the danger with the companies who are principally Oscar chasers.
Yeah.
Kauf Weinsteins. That they kind of, as soon as they figure out which one is their top dog,
They sort of
abandon everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Weinsteins.
Because
the
their release strategy is so completely 2 or 3 months of the year.
Right.
And whereas with Nowhere Boy, if they had released it when it was being released, like over a year ago.
Yeah, in Britain it was released over a year ago.
And she was getting nominations for things in Britain. It just seems like the traction from I've Loved You So Long, if they had released it when it first came out, would have helped, because it would have been the very next year where she had this performance that people were talking about.
Yeah, it's weird that I saw it at Sundance after it had already opened in the UK and kind of done its thing. It's a really strange strategy.
But then they wouldn't have been able to nominate Penelope Cruz for 9.
Oh, yeah.
Burn.
I was sitting somewhere trying to remember the Best Supporting Actress nominees from last year, and I hate it when I can't remember them all, and Penelope Cruz totally slipped past me. I completely forgot about 9, that it ever happened.
Well, and that was basically the Afterglow nomination, which happens all the time.
Yeah.
Which will probably happen for Jeff Bridges this year.
Well, my person would be Michael Fassbender for Fish Tank.
Oh my god, such a good pick.
Which I realized was such a long time ago, and probably not. I'm not as good as you guys at figuring out sort of like what usually works for voters, but it seems like, you know, after Inglourious Basterds and the kind of way he's getting cast in everything, that at some point there have been people who get that nomination where they're really excited that you're becoming a star. And he's just so, so good in Fish Tank. And it does feel like the kind of thing that if it had opened a little bit later, he might have the momentum that John Hawkes sort of has right now, which I think is great. I'm excited for John Hawkes, but they're both so stupendous.
I do think you're right about the sort of star trajectory of him, and I would not be surprised to see him nominated next year for the Dangerous Method. Any of the 12 movies that he's going to be in next year.
For X-Men, I think, is where he's really going to get the nomination.
The movie he's making with Chloe Moretz, whatever that is, they'll both get in.
She's another one who's going to be in every movie going forward.
Who was it one of you two we were joking about, like, how did Chloe Moretz not get the True Grit role? They cast her in everything.
Yeah.
The Coens are, you know, they do what they want.
I know, but I just think, like, how mad must she have been?
Yeah. You know? I was just thinking, I bet she auditioned. I feel positive that she did. And then the Coens were like, nope, people know who you are.
I don't like her. Is that weird? Is that because
no, I don't. I'm not really a fan either. I'm just saying, like, they seem to have no imagination.
Yeah,
you know, like,
that
she's
is true.
The, if you have a 14-year-old role, it's her.
Well, you know, she is pissed as Alison Lohman.
Alison Lohman, man.
She's ready to give up those preteen roles. It doesn't matter if she's 35.
Well, now all of that's going to Mia Wasikowska, so.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'll see Mia
Wasikowska. Oh, I think she's great. Yeah, I think she's great, so.
But if we're just randomly giving supporting actress nominations to people because we like the movie, cough Mila Kunis. Sorry, Joe.
I'll be happy alone on that limb.
Why didn't Mia Wasikowska get any attention for The Kids Are All Right?
Well, she's very good in that.
She's got that whole climax is all about just her face.
Yep.
That one shot of her, it's really an amazing shot.
That whole end at the campus is just so perfect.
I know, it's I think that's really what sealed the movie for me.
Yeah, it's the landing. They stuck the landing.
They did.
Which is so important to do. I've been bagging on True Grit a lot, but I do think it ends very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that.
Spoilers.
Spoilers, there's an ending to True Grit.
I want to talk about supporting actress kind of in depth. I want to, I know we can finish this category, but I want to talk about Helena Bonham Carter just for a bit.
Yeah.
But okay.
Nathaniel, do you have a favorite that you wanted to toss in? Or is that yours?
I haven't done my list yet, so like I'm afraid if I say somebody, they won't show up on my Film Bitch Awards. And then people will be like, but you said.
People are really sticklers for consistency with you on those awards. That is true.
They really are.
But the thing is, it is like, it's exactly like the top 10 thing where I have like tiers of people. You know, I give it a lot of thought, but at the end, finally, you just have to pick somebody, you know.
Just go ahead and pick somebody. Just do it.
Live on the edge.
He's probably not enough of a long shot, but I would, John Hawkes is, you know, I'm very much rooting for. I mean, I don't think he's going to get nominated, but I would, if I could.
You think it's not possible?
No, I do. I guess it's possible. The SAG, people take them a little bit too seriously every year as an indicator because they're never like 100%. And there's usually a couple people that have never been recognized anywhere else, and that's their only nomination.
Right.
SAG.
So who's going to muscle him out then for that fourth or fifth slot is the question.
Well, I mean, right. I think he would have to muscle somebody out.
Yeah, yeah. He's up against like Jeremy Renner, against Andrew.
And
Garfield.
I'd actually be happy, yeah, if I could force something without looking at my list because maybe they both won't make it. But John Hawkes and Dale Dickey, for me, they made Winter's Bone.
Yeah,
like, I don't quite get the Jennifer Lawrence thing. I thought she was solid, but I don't quite get the in a, such a competitive category why she would be have to be one of the five. Like, I don't get that.
Because she's pretty. How this works.
I mean, in a lesser year, I would say sure, but like there are so many great lead performances this year.
Yeah, she's sort of riding the outer edges of mine personally as well. But I mean, that's no slight against her because I do think she was fantastic.
Yeah, the acting across the board in that movie is very good.
Yeah, I had never watched Deadwood, and I had seen Me and You and Everyone We Know, you know, 6 years ago whenever it came out, and I watched that again a couple months ago, having no idea that John Hawkes was the same guy, and it blew my mind. I had no idea. Like, that range is astounding.
Yeah, he's always been a very solid supporting player, but there was really not much to prepare you for how good he was at playing this type of character in Winter's Bone.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's root so for Katie, let's all put in to... for John Hawkes. Oh, about Helena Bonham Carter. Oh, I'm just wondering if she is the lock that we're all assuming that she is, given that she hasn't won anything. Melissa Leo has been kind of taking up all the steam there, and like, The King's Speech is still getting bowled over by social network buzz. And, like, obviously the two guys are in, but I wonder if she's definitely going to take up that space that we're all assuming that she will.
I think there's that rush of feeling like when her hostage gets released and she's not burdened anymore and she lived, you know, she's a little thinner, but out. I think that
she's the baby Jessica of this Oscar race, is that what we're saying?
She's a little baby.
Tim Burton is well. The well.
Well, I feel like that. I feel like every year we try and talk ourselves into this whole. Well, nobody really loves that performance. Like, how could anybody love Frost Nixon enough to put it as number one on their ballots? But every year, it's that sort of that soft number three who is right in the center of that category, and they just they wind up in there. She's got enough of the the king's speech tide is gonna roll her in. I really do think.
Yeah, I think so too. But I do. If there was a shock omission, it would be her in terms of actors.
Definitely
because
right.
They have not. I mean, they've had other opportunities to reward her for much better work that they have not taken.
But this is the first chance they've had in a movie that's up their alley, probably.
Yeah.
Since The Wings of the Dove, I can't remember the last time she was in a movie that they would nominate her for.
Well, that's true, but back when, you know, she was making prestige movies, they would ignore her too. I mean, like, I still to this day don't understand how they didn't care about her in Howard's End, even though they loved the movie.
They loved everything about Howard's End. Yeah, that's true.
So if Helena Bonham Carter doesn't get in and Jackie Weaver doesn't start, Nathaniel, what will you do?
You know what? I'm so angry that it's even an issue at this point that I can't. I've been trying to prepare myself.
So why are you so down on Jackie Weaver's chances? Because, I mean, she showed up. Where is she? She showed up at the Golden Globes, and no one really thought that was going to happen. And then she got ignored by SAG. But why are we? Why do we feel like she's?
It's
doing
because
that?
It seems to me like a timing and momentum issue. You know, the minor critics organizations, and I realize Oscars aren't thinking, ooh, I wonder what Austin film critics said. You know, I know that Academy voters don't really think that way, but it just seems like the momentum is definitely in favor of Mila and Haley.
Haley is very likely to get that actress slot that seems kind of open. Maybe we care more about category fraud than other people do. I'm sure that's true, but it's...
Wait. Maybe?
You got a lot of experience with bounty hunters, do you?
That is a silly question. I'm 14.
You can run on for a long time.
Time for you to go home.
I don't like you. I will not go back, not without Chaney, dead or alive. Gotta cut you down.
But if you've got six people you're trying to squeeze into one category and four people in another one, I mean, and there's the argument to do it, why not?
Well, I'm not sure. Are you...
To promote Hailee Steinfeld to lead, even though they're trying to tell you that she's supporting.
I don't think they're going to do that. I mean, I like a lot of people are saying she'll, you know, whale rider her way in. The only reason that didn't happen with Keisha was that there was no lead in that movie other than her.
Right.
Whereas... here you've got this massive star with Hailee Steinfeld.
Fair enough. Well, not called, like, girl on the horse ride. I'm kind of hoping that they'll split then between people who are doing one and people who are doing the other, and then she won't get in for either, which would be fine with me.
I actually don't think that it's that far-fetched. That entire movie, I've never seen a movie sort of built around a child actor designed to make everybody sort of love and praise that child actor. Like, everything in that movie is sort of going towards pushing her to some sort of awardsy forefront, making everybody love her. And I think it's a good performance. But I also think, if you look towards, like, the bottom of that Best Actress top five, it's softer than maybe even we're giving it credit for. I think Swank, Swinton, and the girl with the dragon tattoo, I don't think have any shot. I don't think Leslie Manville... And I don't think Michelle Williams is as solidly in there as we think. I would not be surprised at all if Hailee Steinfeld gets bumped up.
I mean, I guess it would make sense to put her in that spot, but I think the fact that she's so young, and as Nathaniel pointed out, there's two other big movie stars there with her. I don't think they'll rebel against the category fraud the same way they did for, like, Nicole Kidman. Kate Winslet.
Kate Winslet.
Yeah, I think Jeff Bridges just gives them the excuse to do it. I do worry that that's going to cost Jackie Weaver because, you know, people don't know who she is, really.
Well,
she started out, like, the precursors doing well, but then, I mean, maybe I'm worried too much. I mean, the initial precursors are more important. Like, New York and L.A. are way more important, of course.
Yeah.
What they say, because people, I don't know.
Yeah, I think Weaver has a very strong, certainly a stronger case than, you know, anyone outside that sort of top seven that we've written off, like a Diane Wiest or like a, I guess, Miranda Richardson. We're not even talking about Miranda Richardson anymore, which is weird. She went from like...
Maiden Dagonet fell apart.
Or like a Sissy Spacek, who I'm still kind of shocked never made it into that conversation, that Robert Duvall is still weirdly in the conversation. I figured that movie was either going to be an all or nothing kind of thing, where if Robert Duvall is getting conversation, then why not Sissy Spacek? But
Now, why has Robert Duvall? I actually haven't seen Get Low. Why? I keep like trying to, and then everyone says it's so dull that I just never.
I actually think that he's safer than people think. You know, I've heard a lot of people saying, "Oh, he's going to be the one left off the list." You know,
I think he's that perfect SAG nominee that doesn't become an Oscar nominee. He's older. He's more respected.
I don't know. I think he's. I would be kind of surprised if they snub him, just because, you know, he is an acting legend, and, you know, the internet is always trying to remind itself of, or pays lip service to, but doesn't actually think about, is the fact that the Oscar voters are not 20-year-olds.
Right.
Right.
What? Stunned by this.
And so Robert Duvall is more important to them than, you know, somebody like Jesse Eisenberg. I'm not saying Jesse Eisenberg is going to get snubbed. I don't think he is, but I think in terms of like the grand scheme of these 6,000 people who vote on these things and who've been in the industry for decades, that Robert Duvall is an important figure to them.
That's
but
a good point.
You do act, it's so boring.
No, you know, I would totally agree with that. I did not like the movie, but the fact that people were so gaga for it, some people, leads me to believe that enough people like it for it to happen.
No, I'm sure you're right. It's just, yeah.
Do you think that his thunder gets stolen by Jeff Bridges in the category more than we're maybe thinking about? That
maybe, for a while I thought it was one or the other of them. But then I started thinking, like, Ryan Gosling, even though I think he's brilliant in Blue Valentine, it's weird. Like, his awards track so far has been weird. It's almost like you can only, because they don't prefer the young men in Best Actor, yeah. It's almost like they've got Franco and Eisenberg, and that's just enough for them, you know?
It would be sort of a shockingly young year. I guess I know that the Academy doesn't think as one in this way, but he got the Globe, SAG, Oscar snub thing for Lars and the Real Girl. Like, would they do that to him again? Like, that just seems so... unnecessarily cruel. Obviously, like, they don't think that way.
You can tap dance?
Can you?
No. Here, I'll play a song and you dance. Okay. I can't really sing. I have to sing goofy in order to sing. Like, I have to sing stupid. Okay?
Okay.
Gosling has, or that Michelle Williams has a better shot than Gosling does? I know they're both on the bubble.
No, I think Gosling has a better shot than Michelle.
Oh, I think Williams really? Does.
And Williams has a lot more competition in her category.
Right.
Yeah.
I definitely think Gosling's in a better position.
I do too.
Didn't they snub him at the Spirit Awards?
They nominated her, but not him for Blue Valentine? Forgot that.
But that happened. I mean, Spirit Awards are totally weird. Like,
that's
they do
true.
Weird.
That's
yeah,
true.
I don't think. Yeah, I think the Spirit Awards snubs matter much less than the Spirit Awards sort of nominating somebody and putting them into the conversation.
They really didn't go for Blue Valentine that much at all, if I'm remembering correctly.
Right. That's true. And Blue Valentine does seem to have it seems to be cresting at the right moment. We'll see.
Yes. Yeah.
I love you.
Okay, so I feel like we've talked about actresses, both categories.
It's so weird how we got stuck on that.
Well, I did say, you know, so the listeners know, I did say, let's not discuss a certain two people that we're done discussing. We haven't said their names, so we're going to keep it that way.
Yeah.
Because they have been discussed enough. So
we're talking about Clint Eastwood and Hilary Swank, right?
Yes.
No.
Who are both very strong contenders in this year's Oscar race.
They are the emeritus must not discuss people.
Well, and thank goodness for Small Favors, a Hereafter isn't sticking around somehow. Like,
yeah, that dropped like a stone.
Yeah.
It's having a little party with Maiden, Dog, and Hum right now.
I know, right?
Oh, don't, don't compare it to Maiden Dagenham. It's such a Maiden Dagenham is a much better movie than
Oh, it is. It is. But you know, it's like the category of movies that suddenly nobody cared about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I, you know, Maiden Dagenham, I'm sorry, a lot worse movies have gotten major Oscar traction.
Oh, totally.
But not well, a lot that's... of worse titles have gotten Oscar traction.
But that's also what makes those sort of these historically terrible Golden Globe musical or comedy nominations. Like my initial reaction was like, oh, it's the Globes. They do this every year. And then I got to thinking like, well, what exactly made them go for those over, say, like Gwyneth Paltrow and Country Strong? Like they could have done that kind of that very Globesy thing that they do in much more interesting ways, I think. Than the Taurus Alice in Wonderland. Like, yeah, they didn't really. It felt like
baffling.
It was gratuitously awful. Like, that they were going out of their way to just sort of provoke.
To drive people. You crazy.
I mean, whatever. I'm the one who thinks that the burlesque nomination is supportable, so I suppose my opinion means nothing.
I don't get it. Like, everybody immediately was like, they do this every year, but you're right, Joe, they don't.
They don't. Yeah.
Like, 2 years ago, they had amazing movies other than Mamma Mia nominated in that category.
There's usually one or two that it's just like, oh, Globes, you know, you'll do that. But it's like, this was pretty much the entire musical or comedy side.
It was The Kids Are All Right plus a bunch of other garbage.
Yeah. That is the truth.
And like, they saw Easy A. They nominated Emma Stone, didn't they? Am I forgetting?
Yes. Yes.
Easy A would have been easy to toss in there.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's not a great movie either, but it would have been a less embarrassing choice, you know?
Yeah, totally. Well, we'll watch the Globes and care about them, even as much as we say this. We'll still watch.
It's a fun night. Like I mean, people bag on the Globes and rightfully so, but it doesn't change the fact that it is a fun night. Did anybody hear that? Like, right outside, that was me. Midtown is busting loose, y'all.
That was the precursor police getting mad at you for being nice to the Globes.
I know. Certain nominees being pissed that we're not allowed to mention her. That's what I think that was. Yeah. There she goes again.
Yes. Wait, can we do supporting actor really quick?
Oh, sure.
I'm interested that you put Renner in as a lock, since I feel like I hadn't heard him mention.
Yeah, he's just somebody that the internet wasn't, by and large, saying was a lock, but he's been nominated for everything.
And I think it's a nomination that makes sense in light of last year's nomination.
He's got the Afterglow plus a popular film.
Really, really good in that movie.
Well, yeah, he is. I totally support
I didn't like that movie as much as pretty much everybody else did, but I thought he was the clear highlight.
I am actually a little surprised that movie did not get a SAG nomination for Ensemble.
Yeah, that seemed like a slam dunk, huh?
And I fully support it not getting the nomination.
I was about to say, you totally stopped it yourself. I don't know why you're surprised.
Oh, if only I had that much power.
Yeah, it's weird. They took it out and they gave Black Swan the ensemble nod, which is such a weird choice.
It is. It's like not like what they go for. Well, because it's such a one-person show in a way.
And it's so weird.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone said it's a good movie that the Oscars won't go for, and then all of a sudden, it's just everywhere.
I mean, it sounds sort of boring and it takes away any of the analysis of it, but it's just, that's a movie that people liked too much to keep it away for sort of genre reasons or all those other sort of intangibles that we keep talking about. Like, I think that's just a movie that baseline everybody really liked.
They also marketed the hell out of it. Like, that's one of the best, just, you know, from the first preview on, you know, even people who haven't seen it, I'm sure feel compelled to be excited about it.
Yeah.
Like, people were talking about that when I was home in Western New York for Christmas. Like, it was shocking to me, the kinds of movies that everybody was talking about. Everybody could not get enough of Black Swan and The King's Speech.
How different are those movies?
Well, how different, but also just that they're, in any other Oscar year, those could have been the art house niche picks that nobody else was going to see. This could be another Oscar year where all the, you know, Oscar nominees are the movies that nobody wants to see. Nobody wants to give awards to the movies that Americans really love. And sort of the unspoken undercurrent of this year is the big Oscar nominees are all going to be, or at least for the most part going to be, really good movies that the public actually was very much interested in.
That's a really good point. The Social Network was a decent-sized hit. True Grit's turning into a big hit. I mean, there's Inception, obviously. The Kids Are Alright did pretty well.
Toy Story 3, yeah. Yeah. Like,
I mean, The Kids Are Alright made, you know, a lot more than Hurt Locker.
Yeah, well, everything did.
Well, in any year that you can get good movies that are going to keep that narrative at bay, because I hate that narrative more than any other. Big ups for 2010, I think.
Did you just cut off for anybody else, or is that just me? No, what? you were getting some, like, stutter in the voice, but maybe that was just on my side.
Did the King's Speech just say stutter?
That's right. Can we talk about Birdie for a second and his troubles?
Oh, Colin Firth.
Okay, so were we done with supporting actor, or did we never go there?
I think we talked about Jeremy Renner for a moment. Again, we spend like an hour and a half on actresses, and I was just like, supporting actors, get them out of the way.
Any of you share my love of Matt Damon and True Grit? Does anyone else want to see this nomination, or am I alone on this?
I want to see any nomination for Matt Damon other than last year's nomination.
I think if he gets it this year too, we're going to be in danger of him being rewarded constantly just because of who he is.
Because he's Matt Damon and everybody loves him?
Yeah, because, I mean, how else to explain last year? And then this year, if he has no traction whatsoever, so if he's suddenly nominated, it'll just be like, Matt Damon's going to be there every year for some reason.
Matt Damon somehow manages to be both incredibly underrated and overrated at the same time. And I don't quite... Like, he gets so much media attention, and yet he's had so many really great performances that went completely ignored and undervalued. And then he gets nominated for Invictus, and nobody cared about that. And it was just like, that was such an overrated performance. The Academy and the public are always either two steps ahead or two steps behind of where we should be appreciating Matt Damon. Right? Nobody's appreciating Matt Damon right, is what I'm saying. But he's gotta get on the ball with that.
I think Ben Affleck does.
Well, Ben Affleck appreciates Matt Damon. And I guess Jimmy Kimmel.
Is he being overappreciated right now? So.
Ben Affleck is the new Clint Eastwood. You heard it here first. It's totally true.
Within 10 years,
he's going to be nominated for everything every year.
Do you think he'll continue acting
it's,
like...
It's totally the Clint Eastwood trajectory. Soon everybody will be calling him a master.
They're kind of already doing that.
I know, after only two movies.
That's going to be the new Get Off My Lawn.
Is what?
Oh, God. Old Ben Affleck. I'm not ready for that.
Isn't he already, though, kind of old Ben Affleck? My Ben Affleck iteration is bubbling over.
I liked The Town just fine. Thank you very much.
I just don't understand he's a master. Other than for the same reasons, you've heard this too much from me.
But I just rewatched it last night, and I think that movie could easily have starred like Matt Dillon and Ludacris and come out on December 10th, right? And made like $6 million. Like, if you just look at the script and what's in it, like, the fact that it's as exciting as it is, and there just seems like there's so much more happening than maybe there is, like, it is, it's pretty impressive.
Oh, I thought it was good. Don't get me wrong.
The Town's not going to get a Best Picture nomination. Then we're all going to shit here, having spent so much time talking about it.
Oh, I think it is. You don't think so?
No, I don't know. I was just...
But what would it knock out? 127 hours?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think 127 hours is really vulnerable for some reason.
Or is The Kids Are All Right still vulnerable, or did everybody give up on thinking that was vulnerable because of SAG?
Wait, when did we think that was vulnerable?
A lot of people did for a while, before SAG said yes to the nominations.
Why do we think that all three of those movies can't get nominated?
What would they kick out, though?
Well, if we're thinking King's Speech, Social Network, The Fighter, Toy Story, True Grit, Black Swan, all in.
Inception
is in. That's 7.
Winter's Bone,
I think, is vulnerable.
I don't.
Really? Okay.
I don't either.
Do you think enough people actually bothered to see Winter's Bone for it to...
Yes. I think it's the frozen...
It's done so well in the precursors.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, regardless, I think 127 hours is probably the one that's going to get left off out of all of that. I think that downward trajectory has been going for quite a while and through the worst possible period. It really didn't get any kind of rebound bump during the time that it needed to.
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt. Bathroom break, intermission. Get your popcorn.
This is far from over. You haven't seen the last of me.